This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I need to be blunt. The world is on the brink of a catastrophic moral failure. And the price of this failure will be paid with lives and livelihoods in the world's poorest countries.
That's the WHO's Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, warning of the unequal distribution of COVID-19 vaccines between rich and poor countries could prolong the pandemic. Details coming up. Also, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has won a sixth term in office. And the death toll in Sudan's West Darfur province has reached 83. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Uganda Electoral Commission says President Yoweri Museveni won a sixth term in office, capturing 58.64% of the vote, compared with 34.83% for the next closest candidate, Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine. Reporter Catherine Nambi is in Kampala covering the election. She says the opposition is prepared to challenge the results. The National Unity Party, which Wine leads, says it has evidence of irregularities in the voting.
So they have enough evidence to challenge the polls and say they will table this at an appropriate time. They have not said when they are tabling the evidence, but they say they have all the evidence to show that there were a lot of irregularities in the polls.
The spokesman for the Electoral Commission told VOA's James Butty the election was conducted transparently and that Museveni won with a sound lead. But he said all candidates would be welcome to challenge the outcome in the courts. However, Catherine Nambi reports that many opposition candidates do not trust the courts because they think Museveni controls the judiciary. The military has cordoned off Wine's home, and Catherine has this report about the situation.
Yes, Wine's party members insist Wine is still under house arrest. They say none of them has been allowed to access him for the past 3 days. No one is accessing his house, and they are not even talking to Wine on phone. He's under house arrest. The security is still at his house. The media has also been barred from accessing Wine's house for the past 3 days.
She also says Wine's supporters are planning to take supplies to the home as no one has been allowed to leave to get food. The police say they are guarding Wine's house to prevent large protest demonstrations and say they have intelligence that protests are being planned. The government shut down the internet last week, making it hard for people to stay in contact and to report on events in the country. Today, there is some internet access, but Catherine Nambi says it remains limited.
Government said they are restoring it in phases as they monitor the situation. And they say if they say if people continue abusing it, they will shut it again. So I think people are using it cautiously.
Catherine Nambi said it was not clear what the police meant by warning against abusing the internet. She also said other security measures remain in place with a strong police and military presence in many parts of the nation's capital. Cameroon police said Saturday they have opened investigations into a network of traffickers who allegedly buy babies from the Central African state to sell in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Some members of the network believed to have illegally sold scores of children were arrested Saturday in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, with babies they had bought and a mother who said she wanted to sell her unborn child because she is poor. The mother was also arrested. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Baldwin Gweha, senior official of the Gendarmerie post at Mimbuman, a Yaoundé neighborhood, says he arrested 41-year-old Pierre Esola for carrying out an activity that violates human dignity.
C'est en ligne, y a pas de bureau.
Sola tells Cameroon police that all negotiations with potential buyers and sellers of babies
by telephone.
J'ai été contacté par une femme du Congo.
He says he found a Congolese woman on social media who was offering to help teenage and single mothers to take care of their newborn babies. He says he immediately contacted the Congolese woman through WhatsApp and told her that many young girls with unwanted pregnancies in Cameroon need help. He says he recorded and sent videos of poor teenage mothers to the woman in Congo. He says while in Cameroon, the woman disclosed to him that she had another partner who helps her to buy babies from the coastal Cameroonian city of Douala. Esola said his intention is to help poor mothers, especially teenagers, who abandon their babies on the streets because there is no one to help take care of the babies. Cameroonian police report that last year, several hundred children were abandoned on the streets by poor mothers. At least 24 babies were either killed or found dead after their mothers abandoned them. Gweha says Esola is part of a network that sells Cameroonian babies in the DRC.
Dans la foulée de l'opération, nous avons pu interpeller le promoteur proprement dit.
He says among those already arrested is an online trafficker who facilitates the buying and selling of newborn babies. He says the Cameroonian police have also arrested two mothers who sold their babies, two women from the DRC who bought babies, and a babysitter the women paid to take care of the newborns in Yaoundé. He says the four babies recovered from the traffickers have been handed over to the Chantal Biya Hospital in Yaoundé for medical follow-up and care. Gweha said the buyers paid $2,000 for a one-day-old baby who was still very fragile and $6,000 for children that were healthy and more than 3 months old. The police said the children were hidden in a Yaoundé house and fed infant formula. The children were given injections that put them to sleep. The presence of a pregnant girl near the house and cries of the children, however, caused neighbors to alert the police. Gweha said it was not the first time the women from the DRC bought Cameroonian children, but said that because of the investigation, he could not reveal the identities and towns of origin of the Congolese women. Betty Nancy Fonyui, manager of the Yaoundé-based Timely Performance Care Center, says poor mothers could seek services of organizations like hers that take care of vulnerable and poor children.
Children that the parents cannot be able to take care, they bring them to the center, we take care of them, we feed them, we clothe them, we even send even aids in their homes. There are so many centers in Cameroon to help. Poverty in Cameroon is not that bad to make people sell their children out. And those that are selling children to other nations, this is very wrong.
There are no statistics on the illegal buying and selling of children in Cameroon, but the Central African State says childless couples within and out of its borders are increasingly buying or stealing babies and claiming ownership. Cameroon says it is also working to dismantle networks of child traffickers among Cameroon, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, and Chad. The 2020 Trafficking in Persons report by the U.S. State Department states that Cameroon also is a source, transit, and destination country for children subjected to forced labor and sex trafficking. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The death toll from tribal violence between Arabs and non-Arabs in Sudan's West Darfur province has climbed to at least 83. The Associated Press reports the deadly clashes that started last Friday grew out of a fist fight between two people in a camp for displaced people in Jenina, the provincial capital. Sporadic violence continued yesterday. The clashes pose a challenge to efforts by Sudan's transitional government to end decades-long rebellion in areas like Darfur, where most people live in camps for the displaced. Sudan is on a fragile path to democracy and is being ruled by a joint military-civilian government. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has urged Sudanese authorities to de-escalate the West Darfur situation. Power outages are plaguing South Africa again as health facilities need electricity to treat seriously ill COVID-19 patients. Energy analysts blame the blackouts on mismanagement and corruption at state power company Eskom during Jacob Zuma's presidency between 2009 and 2018. Instead of maintaining equipment and completing proper upgrades, they say Zuma's cronies looted Eskom. Darren Taylor reports.
Eskom cuts electricity to parts of South Africa when its power stations can't keep up with demand. It calls this load shedding. Each outage costs the economy hundreds of millions of rands. Small businesses that can't afford expensive generators are forced to close. Hospitals battle to keep life-saving equipment running. Zuma's corruption didn't just bleed South Africa's public coffers dry, say civil society groups. It continues to literally cost human lives and livelihoods.
Load shedding came back to Eskom after Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa was appointed president of the country.
Brian Molefe was appointed by Zuma in 2015 to lead Eskom, which he did for almost 2 years. Testifying at a commission of inquiry into corruption, Molefe blamed the country's current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, for the electricity crisis, and took credit for what he called excellent management during his tenure as Eskom CEO.
Under my leadership and the leadership and technical expertise of other engineers who, when I was there, became very invigorated and determined to end load shedding. We defeated load shedding in August 2015.
But energy consultant Chris Yelland says Molefe's speaking nonsense.
Now he's blaming the president for all the problems at Eskom. I mean, for Mr. Molefe to blame him for all the problems, the corruption that was done by Mr. Molefe himself is outrageous.
The commission heard evidence that Zuma and his friends, Indian businessmen AJ and Atul Gupta, conspired to appoint Molefe to lead Eskom, to steal from the utility and channel the money to them. Lies, Molefe told inquiry chairman Judge Raymond Zondo, before acknowledging a close relationship with the Guptas.
I've been to their house. I have been there on numerous occasions to attend family functions, to have private meetings. Okay. So I will not try to say to you that I don't know them,
yes.
It is fashionable to do.
The Guptas now reside in Dubai, and the South African government's trying to extradite them to answer the many allegations against them. Yelland says because of the unholy alliance between the brothers Zuma and Molefe, the country's energy future is bleak.
We cannot rely on the government, on the state, to provide new generation capacity within the next 2 to 3 years. It just takes too long to deliver. I mean, it took 6 years to bring out the new integrated resource plan for electricity. Since it was brought out at late November 2019, not a single kilowatt of new generation capacity has been procured by the state, and it's now early 2021.
He says the only way out of the mess is for citizens and businesses to begin producing their own power.
And government needs to move out of the way. New generation capacity, rooftop solar PV on factories, on parking lots, on buildings, on warehouses and farms and industry and mines can be delivered quickly, painlessly, at no cost to the state, and it's being held up by bureaucratic red tape.
That red tape's in the form of legislation that makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for private individuals to generate electricity. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
After a third consecutive night of riots in several Tunisian cities. The French news agency AFP reports some 600 people have been arrested. Interior Ministry spokesman Khalid Hayouni says most of the arrested were of ages 15 to 25. They burned tires and bins to block the movements by security forces. Police used tear gas to disperse protesters in Kasserine, Silana, and other cities, including the capital, Tunis. The defense ministry says the army has been deployed in several cities. Protesters are angry that the North African country is on the verge of bankruptcy and has poor public services. Many feel disappointed that on the 10-year anniversary of the country's revolution that brought down autocratic leader Zine El Abidine Ben Ali, there is little to show in terms of social and economic improvement. The Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, warns of the unequal distribution of COVID-19 vaccines between rich and poor countries will prolong the global pandemic. Tedros delivered the stark warning Monday at the opening of a week-long meeting of the WHO Executive Board. Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
WHO Chief Tedros called the development and approval of safe, effective vaccines less than a year after the coronavirus emerged a stunning scientific achievement. However, he warned that hopes of quickly ending the pandemic are in danger. This because the richer countries are buying up and hoarding all the available vaccines, leaving none for the poorer countries.
More than 39 million doses of vaccine have now been administered in at least 49 higher-income countries. Just 25 doses have been given in one lowest-income country. Not 25 million, not 25,000, just 25.
A global initiative, COVAX, was formed 9 months ago to ensure fair and equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines for every country. The organization has managed to secure 2 billion doses from five producers, with options to receive more than a billion more doses. But Tedros said plans to start vaccine deliveries in February to many of the world's poorer countries is now at risk. He said he fears a number of high-income countries may backtrack on their promises of equitable distribution.
I need to be blunt. The world is on the brink of a catastrophic moral failure. And the price of this failure will be paid with lives and livelihoods in the world's poorest countries.
Tedros said he considered this me-first approach self-defeating. He warned rich countries will pay a heavy price in ignoring the needs of the world's poorest and most vulnerable people. These actions, he said, will prolong the pandemic, and added that the restrictions needed to contain the virus will increase human and economic suffering. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
COVID-19 cases are spiking in Nigeria, and reporter Gift Agariga tells us more from Abuja.
Schools in Nigeria reopened Monday following the federal government's order to get students back in class. However, the opening comes as COVID-19 cases surge, and members of the House of Representatives are demanding that the government postpone reopening schools for 3 months, as the country now is reporting more than 1,000 new cases a day. That's up from less than 200 a day in October. The Ministry of Education says it's made comprehensive appraisal of the situation before arriving at the decision to resume classes. However, many stakeholders in the education sector have criticized the reopening. Professor Abiodun Oguyemi is the president of Academic Staff Union of Universities, ASU, Nigeria.
What ASU is saying is that in reopening the educational institutions, our primary concern should be about health and safety of the lecturers as well as the students. Our members are ready to go back to work. We have suspended our strike action. The students are eager to receive lectures, but are the institutions ready for them?
Students of public universities have been out of class since March 2020, when the Academic Staff Union of Universities began a strike. Professor Kwahondo Abe is the dean of the Postgraduate School, University of Abuja. He says it's not possible to protect the health of workers and students in Nigeria's congested schools.
The problem is when students resume, how do we ensure that there is less congestion in the classrooms and in the hostels? That's the big problem because there are classes where you have over 500 students.
Governments around the world are juggling the need to stem the pandemic and the concerns that children are falling behind academically. Solomon Adodo, the president, National Youth Council of Nigeria, has expressed delight on the resumption of schools. However, he called on the government to accelerate efforts to improve school and university facilities.
With the reopening of schools, a big challenge is trust on the whole stakeholders. There should be construction of new lecture theatres, classrooms, halls of residences, and so on and so forth. If we have more of these built across campuses and institutions, we will have gone a great length in decongesting the learning environment.
Adodo advised Nigerian students to adhere to the COVID-19 safety protocols to help reduce the spread of the virus.
The National Youth Council of Nigeria wishes to make it very clear to all that COVID-19 is real. If we can all adhere to the guidelines prescribed for us in Nigeria here by the NCDC and also by the World Health Organization, we will go a great deal in curbing the spread of this disease.
Nigeria entered the second wave of the pandemic in December, and schools were ordered to remain closed until Monday to contain the spike in COVID-19 infections. The country has reported nearly 110,000 cases of the virus and just under 1,500 deaths. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga.
Scores of privately owned schools in Kenya have closed during the COVID-19 pandemic, but some of the school buildings have been repurposed either as residences for families or, in one case, for a business that sells coffins. Brenda Mulinya reports from Nairobi.
John Kamanda sells caskets out of a showroom that, until last year, was full of young life. The building was a privately run Nairobi kindergarten until July, when COVID-19 pandemic forced it to close.
Corona pandemic, it's the one that made me to get this shop because the school was closed, there were no kids.
Kenya's Private School Association says nearly 400 private schools were forced to close because of the pandemic, affecting 56,000 students. Now the buildings are being repurposed as shops, storage facilities, and for other uses. A playground full of children, but it's no longer a school. These children are living with their families in what were classrooms after the school was turned into rental housing. 29-year-old Nasir Kirui taught math and science before the school closed, but stayed on as a property manager.
I used to be a teacher here, but because of money, I lack money, and that's why I asked for the caretaker.
While Kenya's schools opened this month for the first time since March, the impact of private school closures is likely to be felt for some time. Mudeo Kasanga is the national chair of the Kenya Private Schools Association.
We have a very big supply gap in our country, and our population is growing, last census, at about 1 million a year. So we have a lot of work to do.
Kenya's government in September pledged about $64 million in support for private schools, but is yet to make good on the promise. Brenda Mulinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the